Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
And 603-283-6160 is the phone number you can call to get in on the conversation with us. 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
Riley.
And Nikki.
And I'm going to go right into your phone calls and thoughts. We have Creighton on the line in Kentucky. Creighton, what's on your mind?
Hi, I wanted to call in because I learned today that Gert Wilders, one of the politicians in the Netherlands, just won in a vote in the Netherlands to be the Dutch Prime Minister.
And who's he?
Well, he is the leader of a so-called conservative party.
Mm.
The name of it, I can't pronounce, but it translates as Freedom Party. And, as you can imagine, anything like that would be considered very far right from the European perspective. But I find it most telling that in addition to what happened on Sunday with the guy in Argentina winning the presidency down there.
Yeah, Javier Milei.
Yes. I can't pronounce that very well either. but I looked into it and I was like, what's going on here? It just seems kind of strange all of a sudden. And I realized that both of these countries banned the use of electronic voting machines and strongly suppresses any kind of voting that does not involve a human being in person.
Interesting.
Wow. That isn't.
I mean, I don't think that's a coincidence.
I don't either. That seems like it's cause and effect there. But
was this recent that they got banned?
Honestly, I can't tell you how recent that was for the Netherlands.
Mm.
I believe it was just in the past 2 years
wow.
that it was for Argentina.
That is really surprising. That is really
not
interesting.
Positive about they did.
That sounds correlated to me.
I see a wonderful trend here. I just wanted to bring it up, and I don't know if it came up yet earlier today or not.
Well, thank you so much. I didn't hear about that. It does seem like people are really mad in the Netherlands, like farmers. There were huge protests of farmers.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what it was about, but they wanted to regulate people's farms. Do you remember?
Yeah. Didn't they want to, like, kill all the animals, like all the livestock? I think that was a livestock ban.
I can't remember.
Well, that wasn't their official reason. Their official reason is that they were complying with carbon...
Yes.
Rules. Yeah, they're trying to comply with the carbon rules and kill off livestock.
That's terrible.
It's just like ridiculous to say that like cows are bad for the environment.
It's just like even if it was true, it doesn't justify killing cows.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're gonna kill them anyways, right? But
people's property, like your property and stuff like
that. Well, that's the thing. It's like
if you're gonna do to them.
Yeah, like if it's you're a farmer, you deserve to like choose when you're going to harvest your livestock.
And what
you know?
To do with it instead of just killing it and giving it to the government or whatever. And plus, they might not be killing all their cows. Some of them could be dairy cows that aren't going to get eaten.
Yeah.
Anything else, Creighton?
Well, regardless, the point of view is that really isn't about the cows themselves. It's about the idea that the Dutch people do not have the right to earn themselves a living.
Yeah.
In any traditional way.
And it's surprising. Usually things like that happen, and then the states you're talking about, whether it's California or a state in, you know, the EU, they do something really terrible that is, like, more and more tyranny and, like, going, it seems more left-wing. And then usually it just seems like, oh, they just keep voting in the same terrible people over and over again. But I guess if you take away their electronic voting machines, that doesn't happen. That's, now does it?
Maybe not.
Thank you for your
Maybe
call.
Maybe there's hope.
Creighton, that's really interesting. I always wonder about that. Like, I hear people fighting really hard about these electronic voting machines, and there is talk of possibly banning them in New Hampshire. And definitely I'd be on the side of ban electronic voting machines.
I don't know if I'd agree with you, Bonnie, because, I mean, there are definitely problems with voting machines, especially if you can't audit the software and find out how the vote is actually going.
And that's what I mean, just closed source.
So, as a blind person, if I'm voting, a voting machine can help me really work through the ballot and do independent voting so I can cast my ballot independently and not have someone read it to me.
Yeah, but you could be, they could make something that is open source and
I agree with you on that, and they should make something open source, but let's not talk about banning voting machines. Let's talk about pushing for open source solutions instead of banned voting machines.
Yeah, I guess I misspoke when I said electronic voting machines. I just mean, like, I don't care if it's on a screen or on a physical piece of paper. I just want it to be actually possible to audit it.
A lot of people also don't like the mail-in ballots. And I think a lot of these things maybe just have, you know, more space for not like fraud, but you know what I mean? For like things being miscounted.
Yeah.
But I mean, voting's a joke anyways. So
if you don't have to leave your house to do it, then it's really ripe for somebody to just send in a whole bunch. So I guess.
Well, we saw that, right? Wasn't there like, there was that meme where it was like the sudden spike in Biden votes because of the mail-in ballots or whatever.
I honestly, like, I never know what to believe when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I don't either.
It could just be right-wing propaganda, so I don't necessarily remember that, but I would believe it, too. 603-283-6160, I had to look at it for a second, is the number for you to call. We're going to move on to another caller, unscreened caller. What's on your mind?
It's Tom. Now, you may know the war between the states was not started over slavery, but it did take a bloody war to emancipate the slaves in some states. In Maryland, slaves were emancipated by using ballots in a referendum in 1864. Meanwhile, in Virginia, slaves were being emancipated by using bullets, because so many states were overrun with crazy, deranged, depraved, degenerate, selfish, greedy potholes who convinced themselves that the skin color that they were born with made them somehow superior to persons born with darker skin. Now, this country is overrun with crazier people who convinced themselves that the place where they were born makes them superior to persons born outside certain lines on the map.
What is
it going to take to open the borders?
Well, thank you for your call, Tom.
I don't know what it's going to take to open borders. I think it has to change. People have to change. People have to realize that these arbitrary geographical lines on a map aren't going to make a difference. And I think the conservative people especially need to realize that, you know, open borders aren't the problem. The welfare system controlled by the parasitic ruling class is the problem. If you're so concerned about open borders because someone's going to steal your gerb or whatever, then...
But you keep voting in and, you know, supporting people that claim to be GOP or whatever,
but they're stealing your jobs regardless.
They're just getting the state bigger and bigger and making more welfare. It never, scales down. And then you're probably part of the problem. And the other thing is just listening to all this stupid conspiracy crap that they hear. There are always stories that people will bring up. There are like 1,000 million illegals from the most dangerous city in Honduras are on their way up here right now.
Yeah, it's like so stupid. I know, it's so much fear-mongering. And I'm not going to lie, this is going to be mean. Normally I try not to be too explicitly mean, but whenever I see someone post on Twitter or Facebook that's just, like, complete, like, anti-immigrant propaganda, like, oh, our borders, blah, 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 I lose so much respect for them, especially if they're, like, a libertarian-leaning person.
Oh, for sure.
I lose so much respect for them. Like, you are seriously buying this crap. You could have posted anything on Twitter. You could be focusing your energy and your attention on anything, and you're focusing it on this fear-mongering garbage.
Like, listen to this crap. Ian and I went to this, it was a Republican group in New Hampshire that were running a We Want to Secede from the Union petition signing party.
Yeah.
So Ian and I went to go see what it was all about, and I figured it would be some crap like this, but Ian was like, we should go see anyway. And we went, and there was this one lady he was interviewing. He likes to interview people that are in favor of secession. They don't have to be a libertarian, but this lady wasn't, but she said a lot of good stuff. And then right at the end, Ian asked, so what is the most important issue to you? Like, what is the most egregious thing the federal government has done in New Hampshire that makes you think we should leave? And she said, the illegal immigrants. There are some in
New Hampshire?
Yeah, right. Like, that's
in New Hampshire. Oh, are they Canadian?
Yeah, right. I mean, I hear Spanish sometimes.
We couldn't
sometimes
get any further away from Mexico unless we were in Maine.
Yeah.
Or Alaska.
It's just stupid, like, that it's some kind of problem. Like, there's not, like, a bunch of people who are illegal aliens, quote-unquote, from Mexico, and then they're killing people in New Hampshire.
No, literally, I'm going to tell you right now.
She said she saw some in her job.
Oh, she saw some? Did she know they were illegal? Literally, this woman was racist.
Did she ask for her papers?
Yeah, she was just
racist.
Did she ask
for the papers?
She saw a Hispanic person and was like, the illegals! How else would a Hispanic person get to the United States?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
there are Hispanic people. I know you live in New Hampshire and you don't see very many people of any sort of anything else besides white, but, like,
I don't know what her race was. She actually wasn't white, but it was just freaking weird. Like, she
how
like
do you
American.
Know they're illegal? Yeah, like,
how
do you
does
know?
She know they're illegal? She said she saw some.
And I saw like, some. Ian and I could just tell.
Like,
they had an accent.
Just, like, the idea that that is the most egregious issue in the United States. And that's why I was like, I didn't want to go to this event to begin with. And I forgot my kratom. It was like,
Bonnie's like, we have to go.
No.
Oh,
leave.
No, yeah, leave. Yeah, sorry. I should have been more clear.
Ian was like, we have to go. He's always dragging me to things like that anyway. But it's fun. I get to ride in the car with him or whatever. Moving on. Oh, yeah, we have more to this article about homeschooling.
Yeah, so we were talking about the increase in homeschooling. It seems like it's anywhere from 50 to over 100%. The article also says that in Brooklyn, homeschooling in the borough's school districts saw increases that ranged from anywhere from 197%.
In New York?
Yeah, in Brooklyn, specifically.
Whoa.
That's crazy.
From 197% to 492%. Though the total number of homeschoolers still remained under 1,000 students per district. Hmm. But, like, percentage-wise, it's pretty high.
It was just so small before.
Yeah. So the growth has helped transform homeschooling into a racially and ideologically diverse movement. So, like, previously you thought, like, oh, if you're homeschooling, either you're, like, some sort of religious freak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be, like, maybe, like, a rich white person.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's kind of becoming more accessible, you know, with the internet. I mean, you can literally homeschool your kids with internet programs. A lot of them are free. I follow this woman. She has an awesome podcast about unschooling. I wish I could think of what it was called. But she is a black woman from a suburb in Texas. And that's what she kind of tries to break down some of these stereotypes. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, like, yeah, black families and Hispanic families and, you know, like, families of other, you know, like, races and cultures absolutely can homeschool, which it seems, like, ridiculous to me. I'm like, of course you don't have to be, like, a rich white person to homeschool. But, like, a lot of people just have these common misconceptions, right? So,
yeah, or just, like, they feel like, oh, it's not normal, so my kids won't be normal like the other kids that look like them. So
yeah, like, it's not culturally acceptable, right? So if you're
so that's
in...
that's a great thing she's doing to, like...
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I even have seen people who their whole, like, Instagram, their whole advocacy for their personality that they put on Instagram is, I'm black and I go hiking. And when I first started seeing that, I was like, what does that even mean?
That's a little interesting. I'm black and I go, who cares?
But that's the thing, because like that's like a white person thing. It's like, I'm black and I go jogging. You know what I mean? Like, that is such like a white person suburban mom thing, right?
Yeah, apparently that's like, I never thought about it. I never would have thought like black people don't go hiking. But whenever I saw those things start popping up, I was like, well, that's really interesting. They're trying to like change people's minds about it, because apparently... according to these people, they say that a lot of black people they know are like completely either just turned off by it, like that's a white person thing to do,
yeah.
or they're afraid to go out in the wilderness where they think it's like only, you know, I can't say the word on the air, like I can't think of a word, but rednecks or something like that. And so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So I found, just really quick, I found the podcast that I was talking about.
Oh.
It's called Fair of the Free Child.
Hmm.
And she also wrote a book. Her name is Akila Richards. Awesome podcast about homeschooling, unschooling specifically, and how like her family's transition from like realizing public school isn't working for our family. Like, her kids were just really like emotionally dysregulated because of the way public schools are ran. I think a lot of people's children are like that.
Hmm.
And the choices she made to make homeschooling very accessible for her and her family. So I highly recommend that Fair of the Free Child podcast.
So since you mentioned it, we didn't define unschooling. Unschooling is basically child-directed learning.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Riley. So according to data analyzed by the Post, homeschooled students were 3/4 white in, okay, so 3/4 of homeschooled children were white in 2019. By the summer of 2023, less than half were white. Homeschool parents are now roughly evenly split between conservatives and liberals, while those homeschooling before the pandemic overwhelmingly identified as Republicans. Such a rapid growth in the number of and diversity of homeschooling families indicates that more and more of American parents are dissatisfied with their children's education in traditional public schools and deciding to take matters into their own hands. Families who chose homeschooling less for ideological reasons and more for matters of circumstance in what meets the needs of their child in the present moment will help change our conception of what it means to be a homeschooler. However, not everyone is so excited about these changes. Policymakers should think, wow, this is a lot of kids. Elizabeth Barthollet, a professor at Harvard Law School, told The Post, "We should worry whether they're learning anything." Oh, what a joke. "I can tell you right now, many of these parents don't have any understanding of education," added one school board member.
Wow.
"The price will be very big to us and to society."
And that's
but that won't show up for a few years.
That's exactly the type of rhetoric that, and it was racist, against the Irish people,
mm-hmm.
that got public school started to begin with. People were saying, like, Irish people are coming here from Ireland and they're too stupid to homeschool their own kids, so we need a public school system in Massachusetts. And that's where it started.
So, wow. And also, like, we all know on this show, right, we talk about this frequency, all of the downfalls of public school, how they are quite literally failing children.
Yep, they're functional. So, 20% of people coming out of public school are functionally illiterate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, that in and of itself is like, okay, crazy. This is a complete failure. So let me just paint a picture really quick of how, you know, public schools work. So you have these giant classrooms, usually around 30 children in one classroom.
Yep.
And then you have maybe one or two teachers that is in charge of 30 kids. Sometimes some, you know, if you live in a more rural area, maybe a smaller school, whatever, classroom size might be like 15, but the teacher is still drastically outnumbered by these students, right? So they're using a cookie cutter curriculum, and any child that finishes their schoolwork quickly or is bored by the material, they are essentially like it's a situation where you're only as strong as the weakest link. So what often happens is in these public school systems is every children has different interests. They have different things that they want to learn about. They have different learning styles, but they're being forced to learn in this one size fits all model. And then if they finish their work early, or if they're very proficient in something and like they can learn, it doesn't take very long to to teach a child how to do something. It only takes a few hours to teach a lot of these concepts, right?
Yeah.
But for some reason, we have our kids in school for 8 hours a day, and a lot of that time is time wasting, right? So they're waiting in line to go to the bathroom. Mm. They're doing all of these, you know, like in between.
They're waiting for other kids to finish the test.
They're waiting for other kids, and then they're just sitting there twiddling their thumbs, and then they get sent to detention.
And they get in trouble if they're reading.
Yeah, so it's like there's so much wasted time in public school, and a lot of homeschooling families, they're only teaching their kids like the curriculum for a few hours a day. And then the rest of the children's day is spent doing self-directed learning. But so it's not like the kids are not learning anything. They are just learning what they are interested in.
But I do want to go to the phones because we have David in New Mexico online. David, what's on your mind?
Oh, that's tough. Nikki, lose that top knot. Are you trying to be a sumo wrestler?
Oh, my God.
This is radio you can troll, remember?
What are you, a fashion expert?
I also, like 98.9% of our people are not looking at the lives.
Yeah. Can you get me in Vogue magazine, David? I didn't know. I can.
Yeah, I happen to own that magazine. Yeah.
What did you
know that? I was trying to keep that a secret, but you forced it out of me there, Bonnie. And hey, that Cretan from Kentucky, I suspect that Cretan from Kentucky is actually a Cretan from Alabama. I think that's Alabama man.
Why?
Huh? By his voice. I sound like Alabama man that you always hear on Kotex Radio, that bloody mess radio out of Golden Showers, Arizona.
Oh.
Is that you? Is that you, Alabama man? That sounds like you. But actually, when Alabama man calls your show, he really intelligent. When he call Kotex Radio, bloody mess radio out of Golden Showers, Arizona, then he's talking more lately. But he didn't talk so much. He just was trolling, you know, like talk radio you can troll. But anyway, Alabama man sounded very, 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 very intelligent when he called Free Talk Live.
Is that what he talked like? Are you doing a voice?
No. I'm my own self. He's his own self. I'm a poor black man from New Mexico, and Alabama man, he's a white man. I don't know if he's rich or poor, but he's a white man from Alabama.
Well, thank you for the call, David. It would be interesting if Creighton has other, what's the word, like...
Alter egos?
Yeah, on other... When different he calls personas. Into different stations, but I have no idea.
Tomorrow and tell us all about it.
Yeah, I doubt he does.
Maybe he can call in tomorrow, yeah, and tell us all about it. I have no idea. I can't help David with that.
Well, it sounds like David's trolling Free Talk Live.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and once again.
Apparently he's going to get me into Vogue magazine. Yeah, well... Going back to this subject about the homeschoolers.
So before we go on, I want to say that I was educated in a public school. I had a teacher to teach me Braille and things like that growing up. But and teachers are willing to make accommodations in the classroom to help me succeed. But at the same time, you know, it's hard to be in a classroom of 20, 30, 35, 40 students when I have to get Braille textbooks and things like that and have more concepts explained to me. So it's a little harder going to public school.
603-283-6160. Maybe you can call in and tell us about your experiences. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
USA News Update. Airports throughout the United States are on heightened alert following a car explosion on a bridge near Buffalo, New York. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau provided an update on the situation during a parliamentary question period.
There are a lot of questions, and we are following up to try and get as many answers as rapidly as possible. We are in close contact with U.S. officials.
Reports indicate that two individuals have lost their lives, and images of twisted metal have emerged. Eyewitnesses describe the car accelerating directly into an inspection booth right there at the U.S.-Canadian border on the Rainbow Bridge in Niagara Falls. The FBI is on the scene. Hostages held by Hamas could start to be released soon as part of a temporary ceasefire deal that will see at least 50 hostages captured by the militant Palestinian group released in exchange for 150 Palestinians held by Israel. Dave Collins, USA News.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Advertising is simple. It starts with someone who has a need.
Mom!
And then gets more specific.
Mom, I want pizza.
Then we add urgency.
I want pizza tonight.
Before you know it, your GCN advertising message is reaching millions of listeners. Listeners who are definitely in need. You see, advertising on GCN is simple. Your message meets their need, and the result means new business for you. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message to feed those who have an urgent need.
We want pizza tonight!
GCN has the most affordable national radio advertising rates, period. And millions of people listen to GCN radio programs on over 1,000 AM and FM and XM stations and streaming audio live. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Phone number for you to call to get in on the conversation. That's 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, it's me, Bonnie.
Riley.
And Nikki.
And in the last segment, we were talking about homeschooling and talking about these people who obviously work for these parasitic jobs where they are part of school boards, but they want to let you know that most parents don't know the first thing about educating their own children, so we should make sure that lawmakers are paying attention to how many people are
doing homeschooling. I think parents hopefully would know more about educating their children than a school board.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's just like totally an ego thing, right? These people are like, I have a master's in education, so there's no way some poor person could just... You didn't go to college. You can't educate your kids. And it's like, also, y'all have masters in educations, but you can't even teach an 18-year-old kid how to read.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, clearly whatever you're doing isn't working, and your master's degree means nothing.
Such a good point. Like Riley said, I don't exactly know what the functionally illiterate thing means. Like when we read that, I think it was Mississippi and Alabama are the highest states, it's like 25-26% of people that come out of public school are functionally illiterate.
So I think
there.
What that means is like you can read, so they can read like a menu at a restaurant, they can read like road signs, but they wouldn't be able to read a novel.
Or like read like at their level.
So like they might be at like a very low reading level. Or if you were like, oh, you have to write this essay, they wouldn't know how like a paragraph works. They wouldn't know how to use commas.
They wouldn't know how to write a research paper.
Or, yeah, or they wouldn't know how to spell. I think stuff like that. So I think basically like functionally illiterate is like an extremely low reading level. Like they've probably never read a book in their entire life.
Me, you, and Lori had a whole episode where we were talking about how is it possible? How do you live your life if you're illiterate? And then I started hearing that it was that they're functionally illiterate. So I'm like, okay, well, obviously that's a different thing. But I didn't look into it. But I'm pretty sure what you're saying is exactly what
it
is.
And I'm pretty sure, I'm trying to look it up now really quick. I think it only takes, like, a few hours to teach a child how to read. Like, I think, it takes 30 hours to teach a child how to read. And again, I don't know, and that's, like, at 3 or 4 years old. So they're going to be at, you know, the reading level of a 4-year-old. But just to teach someone to read, it takes 30 hours.
Yeah, but once that's older.
But that's, like, okay, so, yeah, and you're, like, right, so children are, you know, it's
better
easier. Yeah, it's easier to teach them things, right? So let's say it's going to take me 30 hours to teach my 4-year-old how to read in a one-on-one setting. So whether it's homeschooling or with a tutor, whatever. But if you, I'm trying to remember like how long it took me to read when I was in public school. First of all, I don't think I was reading at 4 years old quite yet. I mean, a very basic, but basically what it only takes 30 hours to do in a one-on-one setting, when you have like two teachers for like 40 kids, that's going to take years to get the child at that same level, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I actually remember learning to read. I just remember so much about my childhood, and I remember that when we had just moved to Kansas when I was a kid, so I was 4 years old, I was asking my mom, we had all these boxes everywhere in the house, and I had a marker, and I was like, how do I spell my name? And she was telling me, so I already knew letters, but she was telling me how to spell my name, so I definitely knew letters at that point, and I was obviously
backwards
and stuff. I was 4 years old when we moved.
Yeah.
I was 5 when we left. I think I was 3. I think it was 3. But either way, I remember that's the first thing I ever wrote was my name. Probably like, you know, putting something backwards. But my mom had been showing me letters way before then.
I think I learned letters and stuff like that in kindergarten. I think, and how old are you at that point? Like, I guess 4, maybe?
5.
I think
5.
I think
you went in.
Okay, and then 6 going on 7 is first grade.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I already, I was 2 years behind you? At least.
That's just when my mom was telling me what letter spelled my name.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I could read and write at that point.
Yeah.
But
maybe
like
I could
taught,
maybe I could spell my name in preschool. I think I wrote my name in preschool.
And she had, you know, like these things all over the house that were little charts that showed you the alphabet and stuff. And I was just so interested in that. And then I was wanting to know how to spell more things because it was so fun to spell my name. So
yeah.
It's like it's not even hard to teach a kid.
Well, and I
think people are lazy.
So that's the thing too. Like children are very naturally curious. Like they want to learn. And you know, I read a lot of homeschooling books and stuff like that. And just listening to like the how a homeschooling child's mind works. Like they're so interesting. They're like, I'm gonna write a research project on the guitar or like on astronauts. And it's like they're so excited to do their schoolwork because it's self-directed. And then I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, I am so jaded from my awful traumatic experience in public school that I would never, like, even now as an adult, I would never, like, do a research paper for fall. Like, I would never, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people, they're like, oh, I'm going to get my third PhD. And they're like, I just love to learn. I love going to school. I love doing all this stuff. But I'm so jaded from my own poor experience that it's like, I would never, like, to me, that would never be fun. But maybe if I was homeschooled and I was able to do those things in a less traumatic way where it was guided by me and I was learning about things that I was interested in, maybe I would be different.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no way to know, but just basing on, like, stories in the books I'm reading based off of, like, my own personal experience. Yeah.
That's one of the things that I think suck the most about people putting their kids in public school is they don't care that it will literally traumatize them. And not just for learning, but it's the only place that most people experience violence is public school.
Yeah, bullying. I mean, your kids are statistically speaking going to be less intelligent, less creative. I mean, literally what public school does is it beats the creativity out of children. You're forced to sit in a chair for 8 hours a day. So much of the childlike experience is playing and learning through play and imagination and, you know, like, so much of that is stolen from you in public school. And it's not even always the teacher's fault because they're trying to, like, control a giant classroom of children and they need to follow the curriculum and they need to do all this stuff. And it's just like,
they need to make sure that the children are getting the right education.
And that they're just following orders. Though.
They're just following orders.
They're
yeah.
not thinking about, like, what's the best way to educate kids. They're not allowed to.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, they're...
And got told that this is the only way to do it, and now they're like...
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I kind of feel like they're at fault. A lot of them are, you know, parasitic type people who are like, I'm going to have, like, this, like, not that easy, not that hard job. I don't think a lot of my teachers that I had in public school were actually people who were... just love teaching and children, and I feel like most of them were not.
My first grade teacher was, like, clawing at us and stuff, like, basically physically abusing us, kind of, you know, like, more, she was way meaner to me than, like, my parents ever were when they were disciplining me, you know what I mean?
What do you mean, clawing at you?
She would, like, grab at our arms with her, like, dirty cigarette fingernails. Wow. Yeah,
oh,
I was,
God.
Like, 6 years old.
That's crazy.
And this woman was, like, bullying me, essentially, you know what I mean? Like, so, and this is, like, one of my earliest childhood memories, is this scary old lady...
Mm.
Who reeked like cigarettes.
Yeah.
Who, you know what I mean? And it's like, if my mother or my father was teaching me, I would have had so much better of an experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they probably wouldn't claw at you.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, my parents never did that.
Yeah. That is crazy and terrible. But I want to move on to something else that's crazy and terrible. This is from The Register, theregister.com. I'd never heard of it, but Riley brought this show prep in. And it says, U.S. government pays AT&T to let cops search Americans' phone records, usually without a warrant.
So I brought this in because people need to be aware that this is still going on.
Mm.
You know, Edward Snowden back in 2013 talked about warrantless wiretapping going on, and no one said, no one was aware this is going on, and no one was aware that U.S. citizens are being spied on by the government. Because no one cares.
Hmm.
And 10 years later, no one still cares. It's like, oh, well, it's okay. And in Hitler's Germany, in the 1930s, after the bombing of the Reichstag, which is the German parliament building, people were allowing this sort of thing to happen. So, welcome to your totalitarian society, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. and Mrs. America. You have brought this on yourselves by allowing a group of strangers calling themselves government to spy on you, and you still think it's absolutely okay.
Well, they think it's fine because they have compliant citizen privilege, because they think, oh, well, I'm not doing anything wrong, and I'm never going to get in trouble for it.
I have nothing to hide, Bonnie.
Right.
Why should I be afraid of them spying on me?
So if I'm naked in my bathroom changing, why would I be upset that someone's looking through the window if I have nothing to hide?
Yeah.
Right? Because it's common courtesy.
Yeah,
it's privacy.
It's privacy.
Yeah.
We deserve privacy when we have phone conversations.
You didn't contract with some people, so it's okay.
I didn't ask for a group of strangers to spy on me and demand that my phone records get turned over. I mean, I call my girlfriend a lot, and we talk a lot, and I don't want someone listening to our conversations.
Right.
Yeah.
It's terrible. The other thing about it is, as soon as these compliant citizens get something that's really not, it's really innocuous, used against them by the government, because the government has grabbed so much power, they can really get you in trouble for anything, even things that aren't actually wrong, then they'll care, and no one will be there to listen to them.
Yep.
Okay, let's get into the article. It says, a senator has complained that American law enforcement agencies snoop on U.S. citizens and residents, seemingly without regard for the privacy provisions of the Fourth Amendment. under a secret program called the Hemisphere Project that allows police to conduct searches of trillions of phone records. According to Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, these searches, and he's a Democrat from Oregon, these searches usually happen without warrants, and after more than a decade of keeping people, lawmakers included, in the dark about Hemisphere, Wyden wants the Justice Department to reveal information about what he called a long-running dragnet surveillance program.
No one cares anymore. But, like,
we care, Riley.
You and I care. Nikki cares. People listening to the show may care, but they're not going to be outraged by it like they would have been back in 2001 when the stupid Patriot Act came into play.
Yeah, before that happened, before there was like, oh, a need, just like what you're talking about the bombing of the building in Germany. Oh, yep. There's a need now for this. People are so gullible. But,
yeah,
you know,
they are.
The more people that learn about stuff like this, because a lot of people just don't know what's going on, the more people that do care, Riley. So that's why we talk about it.
Yes.
Cool. I have serious concerns about the legality of this surveillance program, and the materials provided by the DOJ contain troubling information that would justifiably outrage many Americans and other members of Congress. Wyden wrote in a letter to U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland. Under Hemisphere, the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy pays Telco AT&T to provide all federal, state, local, and tribal law enforcement agencies with the ability to request searches of trillions of domestic phone records dating back to at least 1987.
What? Whoa. I didn't even know they had phone records from 1987.
That's crazy.
Plus the 4 billion call records added every day.
Wow.
Whoa. That is crazy. AT&T declined to answer any specific questions about Hemisphere, but a spokesperson told the Register, to be clear, any information referred to in Senator Wyden's letter would be compelled by subpoena, warrant, or court order. We defer to the Justice Department, to whom Senator Wyden's letter is addressed, for comment. The AT&T spokesperson said, I knocked my microphone away from my face. Like all companies, we are required by law to comply with subpoenas, warrants, and court orders from government and law enforcement agencies. I mean, that's what AT&T is saying, but Senator Wyden says that it's usually without warrants, so
yeah.
I wonder who's lying. According to Wyden, federal and state law enforcement agencies can request a Hemisphere search with a subpoena, but many law enforcement agencies can issue these themselves. Additionally, any law enforcement agency across the country can request access to these searches, and they aren't limited to drug-related investigations, according to the Oregon senator. Hemisphere first came to light in a 2013 New York Times report that alleged the scale and longevity of the data storage appears to be unmatched by other government programs, including the NSA's gathering of phone call logs under the Patriot Act. Wow. Says, it's not classified, but that doesn't mean the feds want you to see it. Privacy advocates, including the Electronic Frontier Foundations, have filed Freedom of Information Act and state-level public records lawsuits to learn more about the secret snooping program. Few have made a dent. It appears that the feds are doing everything they can to keep Hemisphere secret. Although the program and its documents are not classified, the Justice Department has marked them as law enforcement sensitive, meaning their disclosure could hurt ongoing investigations. This designation also prevents the documents from being publicly released. Yeah, all they have to say is, oh, we're doing a law enforcement job over here. It's sensitive because of that. And then they get to not be transparent with the public about a lot of stuff. Senator Wyden wants the designation removed. Additionally, Hemisphere is not subject to a federal privacy impact assessment due to its funding structure, it's claimed. The White House doesn't directly pay AT&T. Instead, the ONDCP, which that was way up here, what was it? The Office of National Drug Control Policy. So instead of the United States, I mean the White House paying it directly, the ONDCP provides a grant to the Houston High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area, which is a partnership between federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies, and this partnership in turn pays AT&T to operate this surveillance scheme. So yeah, it all just sounds like a dirty scheme where they aren't doing it directly, but they're doing it indirectly, and therefore they don't have to be subject to a privacy impact assessment, whatever that is. It says, in Senator Wyden's letter, he quotes a law enforcement official who described Hemisphere as AT&T's super search engine and Google on steroids. He also cites ONDCP slides and Drug Enforcement Administration emails, which is the DEA, if you ever heard about that, disclosing that AT&T searches records kept by its wholesale division, which carries communication on behalf of other telecom companies and their customers. Another ONDCP document purportedly states that Hemisphere can't be used to identify alternate numbers used by a target, obtain location data, and... It says that Hemisphere can be used to identify alternate numbers used by a target, obtain location data, and two levels of call detail records for one target number.
Hmm.
So I guess if they're searching for some specific person, they can, like, match his voice to another phone number he has. That's pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
That provision means Hemisphere searches can pull in phone records of everyone who communicated with the target of an investigation. In other words, there's some serious snooping happening. This letter to DOJ comes as Wyden and other lawmakers from both parties in the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives have introduced the Government Surveillance Reform Act, which would, among other things, require an independent court order before allowing surveillance of Americans' phone records. It's interesting, I hadn't heard of that either. It has a link here that goes to that. The Government Surveillance Reform Act, I think it was. Since I clicked on it, it disappeared.
Yeah.
It says, this is from November 8th. It says, Uncle Sam snooping on U.S. folks, not without a warrant. Lawmakers agree. So I want to see. It says it's a bipartisan bill that was introduced just right before, or so the 7th of November this year. That would rein in the Fed's powers to snoop on U.S. persons without a warrant under the infamous FISA Section 702. This controversial surveillance tool is set to expire at the end of the year unless Congress reauthorizes it. Oh, that's interesting. So, apparently they're allowed to snoop on Americans under FISA Section 702, and that's going to expire at the end of the year unless Congress decides to reauthorize it. So that's something to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, keep an eye out for it.
Well, that's all really interesting. I'm going to move on to this story that Riley brought in from... Well, I don't know where it's from. I was trying to find it. DailyMail.com about the LDS Church,
It's a mouthful. It's a mouthful.
Yep, definitely. It's the Mormons.
Yeah, the Mormon Church.
I don't know why it has two names, do you?
Oh, is that? So I didn't know those were, like, synonymous.
Oh, yeah,
they are. So the Mormon Church, the Mormon is a nickname for the church because of the Book of Mormon that Joseph Smith allegedly translated.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Similar organizations. Now, there are fundamentalist groups like the Kingston Group in Salt Lake area and the fundamentalist group led by Warren Jeffs that also call themselves Mormons. And they say the mainstream Mormon church is all apostate. So, you know, it's interesting when you start delving into the world of Mormonism.
Hmm. All kinds of different sects call the other sects heretical and apostate.
Yeah.
Well, this from DailyMail.com says, Mormon leaders accused of covering up a decades-long epidemic of sexual abuse and incest that rivals scandals in Catholic Church. Victims say perpetrators are protected, but the abused are forced to forgive their attackers.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's really bad. So, you know, growing up Mormon, I was not aware of all the sexual abuse things going on. I was also... hoping that, you know, safeguards would be in place, that children and things would be, and others would be protected from church leaders abusing people. So in a local congregation, which is called a ward, you have what's called a bishop. And the bishop is usually a man who is in his middle ages, 40s, 50s, sometimes, and the youngest bishop I've heard of being called as a bishop or whatever was 29, but they're generally middle-aged people, and they're generally interviewing people about sexual stuff that they've supposedly done. For example, they'd be interviewing teenagers about their sex lives or whether they're self-stimulating or whatever.
Hmm.
And, you know, some people are really opposed to that. But these bishops are also in places where they can abuse people. And you know, the church does have a hotline that you can call, not the members, but the bishops can call and say, hey, this abuse happened, what do I do about it? And the hotline doesn't go to an abuse advocacy place. It goes to Kirk and McConkie, which is a law firm that the church hired, and they can say, oh, well, you don't need to report it because you're not in a mandatory reporting area for abuse.
Whoa.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. It's insane. It's ridiculous how the abuse of power goes from the bottom all the way to the top. Because in the LDS church, the main leaders are what's called the first presidency. So you have the president of the church or the prophet, which is Russell Nelson, and his two counselors. Then you have the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, which is the second line of leadership. And I'm assuming that, you know, these people are not pure as the driven snow. They've had to get into that position by, you know, being wealthy or, you know, tugging on the right heartstrings or whatever, and getting to these positions of power by playing the church game.
Right. And I find it really interesting that says it rivals the scandals in the Catholic Church because it's mainstream. People know that lots of terrible child abuse has happened in the Catholic Church. And I never even really think about that type of thing involved with the Mormon Church. And I lived in Utah for a while.
I haven't thought about it either until all these stories started coming out. And I was like, oh, no, this is bad. This is really bad.
It says, Mormon leaders are covering up an epidemic of sexual abuse that rivals scandals exposed within the Catholic Church, victims have alleged to DailyMail.com. The Utah-based religion has repeatedly protected perpetrators and punished those who speak out in a bid to protect its reputation at all costs, it is claimed. Victims believe abuse is rampant, with Mormon families said to be suffering extremely high rates of incest. Young girls subjected to horrific abuse say that they're told to forgive their assailants and discouraged from reporting to the police.
Now, I'm all about forgiveness, but telling someone to forgive? No.
Yeah.
They need to do that on their own terms and their own time.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially with, like, childhood abuse, it's like there's so much healing that needs to happen before forgiveness can be given.
And it's sometimes one thing if it's like, oh, this is going to be good for you to just forgive them and move on. It's another thing to be doing it to protect the abuser.
Yeah,
And that's what it seems like is going
on. Absolutely.
Well, if you want to finish this, I'm going to post it in the social media for Free Talk Live. You can find us on Twitter. You can also go to freetalklive.com for more of us. Thanks for listening, and peace.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have longevity.